We love and we laugh and we cry and we fight, just as any other group does.
Absolutely.
So actually those books being available go some way to helping to support the idea that there's more that brings us together than divides us.
Digital learning that's dramatically different. Welcome to this TED Learning podcast.
Every year as a New Year's resolution, I say I'm going to read more. Because we spend so much time on our screens, I say, no, I'm going to go back to good old-fashioned books and read more. I've now started this New Year resolution in the summer, so a little delayed, but I've got there. And I think what it was for me, I was trying to find books that really kept me engaged. Sometimes I start reading and I'm like, oh, it's a bit boring. But one of the books this year that has really grabbed me and I could not put it down was by Bernardine Evaristo, Girl, Woman, Other. Now, you've read it or you're reading it?
I'm halfway through it.
Halfway through. Now, for anyone who hasn't read this book, and I must admit, it's won Booker Awards and prizes and lots of hype around it. But that was years ago. So I let all the hype die down. And I'm normally quite slow to these things. Like, oh, yeah, I'll read that now after everyone else has talked about it. And this summer, I picked it up and read that book. And wow, it grabbed me. It grabbed me because it's written in so many different voices and different tones where you really feel that you're living with that person or getting to know that person and that character, that individual woman. It also has a way of telling some stories of Black women in particular that are so unique. And I would say possibly voices that we don't normally hear from, perspectives and experiences we don't normally hear from. But one of the other things I really liked was the generational thing. There's characters in the book that are younger, who are kind of middle-aged or like kind of older and retired. And again, that's not something you often see and hear. And it was a book I could not put down. I just had to keep reading it.
Yeah.
Which is quite rare for me.
I mean, I am enjoying it. And it was interesting to see, because she toiled for a long time and has written some other books previous to that. So I'm quite keen to sort of track those down and read those as well. But it was interesting to see her share that. Was it the Booker Prize or the main prize? She shared it with Margaret Atwood. And that was good. But then at the same time, it would have been great to see her win outright on her own. But then it's about the fact that she's a published author, she's getting her work out there. And actually her backstory in terms of being of mixed heritage and, you know, how she came to writing is really interesting. I think I might have heard her either, must have been like Woman's Hour or Desert Island Disc, but it's worth seeking out and listening to. But what I'm really heartened to see is more Black writers getting their dues and getting their work published. And when you hear about some of their stories, actually they were often rejected by so many publishers. And in quite recent history as well. And even people like, I think it's Margaret Busby, who's been blazing a trail to get work out there from the African and Caribbean diasporas, you know, had to work really hard to make that work. Again, a life story that's really interesting in hearing, so worth looking that up. I will be honest and say I haven't read as much work by Black writers as I would have liked to have read. Whether that's because I haven't seeked them out or whether they just haven't been available. The obvious ones for me are Maya Angelou, God rest her soul, a fantastic writer, and also just brought so much passion and so much that whole thing of, well, I'm here, I'm going to stand in my truth and I'm just going to get my work out there. And such a colourful life as well. But not everybody has that story. So you've got that sort of biographical story. And then you also have people who are writing, you know, fictional stories as well. But there's a wider context about, say, female writers not getting the same sort of coverage as male writers, let alone if you're a person of colour or you're, you know, a Black person writing. So I think we've still got such a long way to go. And I know, I hold my hand up, I need to be supporting my own Black community more in terms of writing and work. But like you say, sometimes it's just not enough hours in a day.
Did you ever see that on the, it was made into a BBC drama, Noughts and Crosses, that was written by a lady called Mallory, I think.
Mallory Blackman.
And that, I thought that was quite interesting because, again, here's someone who writes many stories, but that one was taken and turned into a drama. I haven't read the book, But I watched the drama and it made me want to then go back and seek out her work just to understand, oh, who is this person? Oh, wow, she's a black woman that's written. And it was turned into a drama. You then think about other... I read a book over the summer as well. It was called Yinka, Where Is Your Husband? And it was about a black African woman who basically keeps... She's not married. And all around her in her culture, it's all about marriage and the importance of getting married. And it's her journey to find a husband and the kind of interactions that she has with all of her aunties and her family and how she goes about it. And I thought, once upon a time, would that story have actually been released and put out there?
Yeah.
Because this is something that people have been living and experiencing for years. And now we have a time where not only has someone written it, but you can go and buy it from your local White Stream bookshop. And I read it and I brought it thinking, I really want to support this writer, but also, wow, we're now at a time where these stories are being shared, published, and you can purchase them more widely than ever before. I know there's some bookshops in London that have always focused on selling black writers. And there was a time where you could only probably get those books from those bookshops. Whereas now you can order these books off your websites and all of that. And it really makes me proud to think that that work is out there and it's been widely promoted, more so than I think in the past, where I think those stories just weren't being published and told.
But I think it also comes back to our lives being positioned in a way of, yeah, we love and we laugh and we cry and we fight just as any other group does.
Absolutely.
So actually those books being available go some way to helping to support the idea that our lives, we are, there's more that brings us together than divides us. Mm-hmm. So actually someone being asked about whether they've got a husband or not, well, that happens in all cultures, you know. You're at a certain age or you're not married, you haven't got kids. And I think that's really refreshing as well. But there's a lady called Charmaine Lovegrove who set up a publishing company, and you know, she's really tried, and one of the reasons she did that is that she couldn't get any further as kind of as a book editor and encouraging the works from and black writers. So decided to set up her own company and has made that such a success. And you know, I'm just so proud to see that happening and to kind of to see that somebody has sort of said, well, to make this happen I'm going to have to step out of the comfort zone. And all too often, that's how people make change. That's how, as black people, as black women, we've made those changes happen. Sometimes we've had to just sit up and go, I'm going to do something about this because it's not right. It might work, it might not work, but at least you can say that, you know, you put your shoulder to that boulder and try to push it on.
Do you think it will inspire the next generations? The reason why I ask that, when I was a little girl, I loved writing, still love writing now. And I used to write stories, and you probably remember drawing and all of that. But never did I think, as a little black girl, that I could be a professional paid writer. Whereas I wonder now, because of the generation that's coming up and they're seeing these writers being celebrated and acknowledged and their work being promoted more widely, I wonder if that's going to inspire more black writers, male and female. Because when I was little, I just never thought of that as an option. And even when I think of my educational career and history of going through school and sixth form and university, I studied English the whole way through. And I think it was only when we got to sixth form, I started to actually learn about black writers. So I'd gone through all of that and then I was like, oh, black people write. Oh, okay. Didn't realise, because you weren't seeing it, you weren't hearing it. You know, the first black poet I think I studied was Grace Nichols. And like you say, Maya Angelou. But that took my whole educational journey pretty much up until sixth form in university to start to engage with black writers, because it just wasn't out there. And I really hope that from some of the names and things that we're mentioning now, people are seeing and hearing this and thinking, I can be a black writer. I can be a writer. Forget black. I can be a writer and get my stories out there. Because when I was 10 or 15, it just wasn't something that I would have thought was on the plate, was an option. Because you didn't have access to it.
That is so true, because we had books in the house growing up. We went to the library. We were encouraged to go to the library. But if those avenues or those books aren't made obvious to you, it's not encouraged. It's not seen. You know, from, you know, James Baldwin. You know, there's James Berry. There's so many black writers out there, but they just haven't been given necessarily the profile to be able to show what they did or what they they could do, but someone I reference is Andrea Levy, you know.
Small Islands.
Yes. And all her other works, you know, Song of Solomon, just fantastic works. And the fact that then Small Island was turned into a stage play, which we went and saw
the National Theatre in London.
That's right, first few days of it opening. We had seats two or three rows in the front. I take credit for that because I booked them.
You did book the tickets, you did well, because literally the actors, you could see the sweat coming down their faces. That's how close we were to the front, it's true, yeah.
And rooted in her lived Caribbean experience, that's very much a Caribbean story. And to see that brought to life, unfortunately, she was unwell and passed away before the first preview started, but she saw it being brought to screen. She was part of making that happen. But it is, again, it's so powerful and speaks to so much of, you know, that whole kind of, you know, come to the UK, or there's this calling to come to the UK, and what people found when they got here. But that writing and that story, there's so much in it that resonates. And it's someone, again, somebody who should be remembered and reflected on, and their work, not just Small Island, but their breadth of work, for showing the path that writers can take when they're drawing on their lived history. So, really proud that we got to see that and to kind of lift her up in terms of the work. And I'm really hoping they put it back on stage again, because I'd love to go and see it again.
That's all from us. You can search the TED Learning podcast or go to the website tedlearning.co.uk.